ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। Canto 6, chapter 16, text 37 of Srimad Bhagavatam. Translation and commentary by His Divine Grace Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, founder Acharya of ISKCON.
सप्तदश गुणोत्तरैरंगकोशः यत्र पतत्यनुकल्पः सहाङ्गकोटि कोटिभिस्तद्यनन्तः। अंगकोशः,
अंग मीन्स can say, we don't eat them. Egg. You see on the train, they're coming. Boiled anda. Then kosha means, who knows? Kosha, no, it's not number. Kosh. Kosh means covering. So this is egg state universe. Translation of Andakosha is egg-shaped universe. Patati means falls. So we don't want to do. Andakoti-koti-bihi. Anda is egg or universe. Then koti means what? Exactly what? Koti means crore, 10 million. And koti means unlimited, millions of such universes. Tat, therefore. Now usually it means that, but here it means therefore. You are called unlimited. What does anta mean? Anta means, any Gurukul voice can say? Anta means? End. So ananta means without any end, unlimited. Translation. Every universe is covered by 7 layers. Earth, water, fire, air, sky, the total energy and pulse ego. Each 10 times greater than the previous one. There are innumerable universes besides this one, and although they are unlimitedly large, they move about like atoms in you. Therefore, you are called unlimited, ananta. Purport. The Brahma Samhita says, Yasyaika Nishvasita Kala Mathavalambya Jivanti Loma Vilaja Jagadandanatha Vishnur Mahan Saiha Yasya Kala Vishesho Govindam Adipurusham Tamaham Bhajami. The origin of the material creation is Mahavishnu, who lies in the causal ocean. While he sleeps in that ocean, millions of universes are generated as he exhales, and they are all annihilated when he inhales. This Mahavishnu is a plenary portion of a portion of Vishnu, Govinda, Yasya Kala Visheshaha. The word Kala refers to a plenary portion of a plenary portion. From Krishna or Govinda comes Balaram. From Balaram comes Sankarshan. From Sankarshan, Narayana. From Narayana, the second Sankarshan. From the second Sankarshan, Mahavishnu. From Mahavishnu, Garbhodakashayi Vishnu, and from Garbhodakashayi Vishnu, Kshirodakashayi Vishnu. Kshirodakashayi Vishnu controls every universe. This gives an idea of the meaning of ananta, unlimited. What is to be said of the unlimited potency and existence of the Lord? This verse describes the coverings of the universe. Saptibir dashagunotarai andakoshaha. The first covering is earth. The second is water, the third is fire, the fourth is air, the fifth is sky, the sixth is the total material energy, and the seventh is the false ego. Beginning with the covering of earth, each covering is 10 times greater than the previous one. Thus we can only imagine how great each universe is, and there are many millions of universes, as confirmed by the Lord Himself in Bhagavad Gita, Atava Bahunaitena Kingyatena Tavarjuna Vishtabhyaham Idam Kritsnam Ikam Shemas Titojagat. But what need is there, Arjuna, for all this detailed knowledge? With a single fragment of myself, I pervade and support this entire universe. The entire material world manifests only 1/4 of the Supreme Lord's energy. Therefore, he is called Ananta. Krishna's one name is Ananta, which means unlimited. So unlimited can't be described. But just to give some idea of how great he is, some description is being given here. That all the material universes rest within Ananta. And one material universe, just like this universe which we are living in, happens to be the smallest of all the universes. There are so many unlimited universes. This is the smallest. It's only 4 billion miles across, according to Srimad Bhagavatam. But there are 7 layers which cover this universe. Earth, water, fire, air. Somewhere else the description is given differently. Here it's given earth, water, fire, air, sky, the total energy and false ego. So the first layer of earth is 10 times greater than the diameter of the universe. That's 4 billion times 10. And the next layer is 10 times bigger than that. And the next layer is 10 times bigger than that. Maybe, you know, there was one story of one man, he played chess with the king. So after he beat him, he was asked, so what reward do you want? He said, just on the first square of the chessboard, I'll take 1 grain of rice. On the next board, 2. On the next square, 2. The next 4. The next 4 times 4, 16. The next 16 times 16. Gurukul boys, how much is that? 264, something like that. Then next, so each time, increase it. They said, well, all they want is a few grains of rice. But then, by the time they came to the 64th square, the number had become so big that maybe in the whole world they want so many grains of rice. So he said, well, you can't give it to me, well, just give me a whole kingdom instead. So like that, if you see, each layer is 10 times bigger than the other, then even this 4 billion miles inside is very small. You know? It's like a little pea inside a huge ball, huge egg. Actually, the universe is not exactly round, it's elliptical, egg-shaped. So that's one universe, and there are millions and millions of universes. And they're so big, we can't imagine. And we just see how they're having the election. Big in part on country. And what is the position of India? In tiny little country, in a tiny little planet, in the smallest of all the universes, and even all the universes that is described, another glory of Ananta, is that the universes, they all rest on his hood, just like a mustard seed. Just like if you have a mustard seed in your hair. Of course, we don't have much hair, but maybe in the Shika. Then you won't even feel it's there. So like that, Ananda Shesh bears all the universes without even feeling them. Maybe you've seen the picture of Atlas, Greek mythology. He's carrying the earth on his back like this. He's a big strong man. But he's feeling a very great heavy load. He's carrying the earth. Actually, it's not Atlas, it's Ananta. He's bearing it. But he doesn't feel it's a big heavy load. He doesn't even think. It's just light, nothing for him. For him to carry all the universes is nothing. He doesn't even think about it. Another reason he's called Ananta is because he's always singing the glories of Krishna. That's more interesting to him than carrying the universes. Just the universes happen to be somewhere up on his hood, snake hood. So he's always singing the glories of Krishna with unlimited mouths. And he's going on glorifying since time immemorial, and he never repeats the same thing twice, and he never comes to the end, because Krishna's glories are Ananta. So all these words are used in relation with Krishna. You can't actually describe him, therefore we use words like Ananta, Achintya. Yam Shamasundaram Achintya Guna Swarupa means everything about him is inconceivably wonderful. Achintya, Achintya Guna, Krishna's qualities, they're also Ananta, unlimited, and Achintya. We can't imagine how wonderful, how great is Krishna. We'll see the description of the qualities of Krishna: merciful, compassionate, genius, expert dresser, expert linguist. But it doesn't mean that those qualities are like our qualities. We may also have such qualities. Someone in the material world, he may have the quality of kindness. It's like someone, he sees some little children, gives them some sweets. So that is kindness. But that's not comparable to Krishna's kindness. His quality of kindness, that's a quality, kindness. But Krishna's quality, when he's kind, because he's Ananta, because he's unlimited, then his kindness is Achintya, inconceivable. If Krishna wants to do you good, then how much good he can do you, you can't even imagine. Just like we see, Krishna's kindness, he's the best friend of all living entities. Suhridam sarva bhutanam. Suhrit, so kind, that even though since time immemorial we're all forgetting Krishna, rejecting Krishna, indifferent towards Krishna, Krishna is always with us, in the heart of every living being, just waiting. When will this rascal come, turn around to me? And he's always trying to make arrangements. He sends his devotees, he comes personally and speaks Bhagavad Gita as it is. He comes so many different incarnations, he manifests as his dham, as his naam. In so many ways he's trying to bring us to him. And life after life we're saying, no, no, no. So can you imagine, if you're trying to be nice to someone and they simply this to you all the time, then after some time you say, well, forget this, useless. And even if after some time he comes to you and he needs your help, generally in this material world, friendship means one person, they like another, what they can get from them. So you'll find someone's not very interested in you, but then when he needs your help, all of a sudden he's very friendly and nice. So you can imagine that if you're trying to be friendly to someone and they simply snub you, then again he comes to you and says, do you think you could help me? Forget it. But Krishna doesn't say that. He doesn't forget us. When we turn towards him, immediately he makes all arrangements. Here you are, here's Guru. That's by the mercy of Krishna one gets Guru, by the mercy of Krishna one gets Guru, and by the mercy of Guru one gets Krishna. So that is his kindness. Therefore, Krishna is called Suhrit, means the best friend. Prabhupada was explaining in one verse, this word friend, in Sanskrit, there are three words. Mitra, Bandhu, Suhrit. There are other words also, but he was describing these three words. Mitra, he said, that means like just like an ordinary friend. Someone says, hello, how are you, goodbye, and that. Then Bandhu means someone you're familiar with, you have dealings with, friendly. Then Suhrit means heart-to-heart friend, very deepest friend, that you can't give up their association, you can't give up thinking of them. Someone you'll die for. That Suhrit, very deep, deep relationship. So that Krishna, he's the best friend of all living beings. This is his friendliness, not casual. He's the best friend. So this is an exhibition of his Achintya Guna, his kindness. Like this, all of his qualities. If Krishna is kind, then he's unlimitedly kind. If Krishna is the best in every, whatever he's doing. If he's an expert linguist, means every language he understands. Just like Krishna, the residents of Vrindavan, they were surprised when Krishna was here that he was talking with the parrots and the monkeys in their own language. Sometimes some devotees told them, Prabhupada was here in Vrindavan. He used to speak to the monkeys also. Tell them, just leave me alone, I'm busy translating Srimad Bhagavatam. He used to tell them in their own language, some devotees reported. The monkey would go away. So Krishna, whatever he does, that is unlimitedly wonderful. You see, Krishna, beautiful. In this material world, we have a conception of beauty. But what is that beauty? That is limited. That is limited in quantity. It means that actually no one can be beautiful like Krishna is beautiful, or anyone of the spiritual world. Just like we see, Prabhupada, because he was pure devotee of Krishna, reflecting Krishna's beauty, purity of Krishna consciousness. Therefore, all the devotees at least, they perceive Prabhupada very beautiful. We like to keep pictures of Prabhupada, but someone else might think, we don't like to keep a picture of an old man. We like to keep a picture of a beautiful young woman or a cinema star, something like this. But to devotee, they don't see such people as beautiful. That so-called beauty, that's simply lust, that's all. Their body is lusty, desires means they got a lusty body. But the beauty of a pure devotee reflects the beauty of Krishna. That is different kind of beauty altogether. Actually, this one devotee showed me some time ago two pictures of Brigitte Bardot. If anyone's from the Western world, they know she was very famous as the most beautiful woman. Very beautiful. So they showed some pictures of her when she was on the magazine. One side, picture of her when she was 20 years old, and the next picture when she was 60 years old. So it's a very good picture, very good contrast. How beauty in this material world is limited. That beautiful woman, everyone was so much eager to see her in the movies. Now no one would be eager to see her. She had become extraordinarily, more than most, extraordinarily haggard and worn out looking. So that beauty that is limited by time, one gets a very beautiful body. But that beauty also, what is that story is there, liquid beauty. The beauty is simply consisting of foul-smelling substances. That's all. But Krishna's form, that is inconceivably beautiful, Kandarpa Koti Kamaniya Vishesha Shobha, so beautiful that the cupids in all the universes, whose job is to bewilder everyone with the mundane beauty, they also become bewildered upon seeing Krishna's beauty. And what is that beauty composed of? Achintya Guna Swarupa. His form that is composed of unlimited, inconceivable qualities. Satyat Ananda Vigraha. So there are many words which describe Krishna. Actually, cannot possibly fully describe Krishna. It's not possible. Even Krishna's incarnation himself, Ananda, is always trying to describe Krishna. But devotees, by describing the qualities of Krishna, even though they can't fully or properly describe them, then they take great pleasure in them. And they become purified by remembering the qualities of Krishna. Therefore we'll find this word, Ananta. Again and again we'll find this word, Ananta, used in all the scriptures to describe Krishna. Ananta Viryamita Vikramas Twam in the Bhagavad Gita 11th chapter. Krishna's power is unlimited. His beauty is unlimited. His kindness is unlimited. His forms are unlimited. Another name of Ananta is Shesh. He's called Shesh, Sheshmurti, because he performs all the different services for Krishna. He covers everything up. Shesh means finished. So he covers up all the different services for Krishna. So his name is Sheshmurti. But then another name for Krishna is Asheshamurti, which means the opposite. Shesh means finished. And the Shesh means not finished. A Sheshmurti means he has so many different forms, there's no end to them. A Sheshmurti. That's also stated in Bhagavatam. Avataram hiya sankhanam. You can't count all the incarnations of God. So many incarnations come to the universes for benefiting the universes. So Krishna has unlimited qualities, unlimited forms, unlimited pastimes. His pastimes also unlimited. You'll see Krishna, when he's present in Vrindavan, how many cowherd boyfriends does he have? Koti koti bhi. In this verse, the word is used. Koti koti bhi. There are millions, unlimited numbers of material universes. So the same thing. Koti koti bhi. When Krishna comes, he doesn't come just with two or three friends. He has unlimited friends. Millions and billions of cowherd boyfriends. And they all have an intimate personal relationship with Krishna. So, how is it possible? Hundreds, thousands, millions, billions, trillions, you can't count. You can't count unlimited number of cowherd boyfriends. So how is it possible that they're all in Vrindavan? Because Vrindavan is unlimited. We may think Vrindavan stretches from here to Mathura. This is just if you go on the road. Then somewhere in between there, Vrindavan ends and Mathura begins. But Vrindavan is unlimited. It's not material. Therefore, when Krishna comes with his unlimited friends, then the dham expands. It's not limited. It opens up. And it closes up also. Just like Krishna, sometimes you'll see the description. He's going from Nandagram to Varshana. Or whatever it may be, or Nandagram. I can't, anyway. Some distance, and he goes just in half an hour. Then how is it possible? Of course, for Krishna it's not impossible. Everything's possible. But he's performing his human leela, so how does he walk in such a time? Because the dham also closes up, becomes smaller. So everything is possible by Krishna's atintya shakti. Krishna, how he's performing his pastimes, how he's performing his activities, you can't measure them. In this material world, we want to measure everything. Length, breadth, height, depth, temperature, specific gravity, light, sound. There are so many machines for measuring the different qualities of substances, for measuring the energies. And in this way, scientists, they want to understand the material world by measuring everything. Therefore, they cannot understand Krishna, because Krishna is immeasurable. Even the scientists, they can't even measure this universe. And all the millions of universes together are like an atom on the head of Ananta Shesh. And how will they measure? They'll bring a telescope, and they'll see at the end of the telescope, there's Ananta Shesh. No, they won't see. You can't see him. Even if you develop your telescope so great, you won't be able to see him. Just like an ant crawling here. He sees us, but he doesn't see. He can't understand what is our position. Because we are so great compared to the ant, that the ant, even he's in the same room, he's even crawling on our body. He can't perceive. His intelligence doesn't stretch to understand that I am now crawling on the body of a human being who's flicking me off. He doesn't understand what is this coming. Or if it's a non-devotee, he'll just go like that. Either way, he doesn't understand. So, the difference between the ant and us, there's so much difference that the ant can't understand us. Although it's very easy for us to understand the ant. So, between us and Krishna, that difference is even far greater. The difference between the ant and us is great, and the difference between us and Krishna is much, 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 much ananta, unlimited times greater. Therefore, how can we understand Krishna by measurement? It's not possible. People, they think, show me God. They say, show me God, as if God is some kind of, God is some kind of, they think as if God is some kind of substance. that you can measure, just like they'll measure what are the properties of different chemicals. Hydrogen, it's a gas. Becomes liquefied at such and such a temperature. Composed of, one molecule is composed of two hydrogen atoms. Odorless, colorless, they give the qualities. So, yes, now we have understood hydrogen. Or then you go on to biology. What is a cat? A cat is a certain kind of mammal with four legs. They're different members of the cat family. Okay, one book on cats. Now we understood everything about cats. So you're not going to get God and put in, write a book that he's this big and like this. We measured him, colorless, odorless, tasteless, no form. No, can't measure God. You can't put him in a box and do little scientific tests on him. Scientists think that we should, if we can't see God, then he doesn't exist. They're fools. You'll never be able to see God by your so-called scientific method, because he's beyond the laws of physics. They think everything should obey the laws. He doesn't obey the laws of physics. How can there be such a thing? But God takes specific pleasure in bewildering the atheists who think that we can understand everything. We've got everything under control. Again and again and again, he shows that he can't be understood, even by the greatest scientist. Who's the greatest scientist in this universe? Lord Brahma. He's an engineer, expert. He knows how to construct everything, how to take the raw ingredients of the universe and make it all into a universe and prepare the different bodies for all the different living entities. So he's an expert scientist. So he thought, when he saw Krishna running around in Vrindavan with some of his friends had stolen his lunchbox, and he was running around chasing the cows, he thought, wait, this isn't God. This can't be God. I mean, even I'm bigger than him. I'm a big scientist. He's just a village boy. Let's see what kind of a God he is. So then he stole all his cowherd boys and calves. He said, now let's see. Then he thought, wait a minute, maybe he is God. If he's God, I'm in trouble. So he went back again, and he saw all the cowherd boys and calves still there. And he thought, what's going on? And he looked and he saw in the caves, they're still there, the boys and calves he'd stolen. So then he went back to see Krishna. He was getting a little confused. He thought, this is not very scientific. They were in one place and they're in the other place also. This is against the laws of physics. You can only be in one place at one time. Then he saw that all the different cowherd boys and calves were all Vishnu forms being worshipped by many Brahmas, Shivas, Indras, Prajapatis. Every one of them was unlimited in prowess, in qualities. Then Brahma understood that I may think I'm very great. I'm such a big scientist. I'm such a great engineer. But I'm nothing in comparison with Krishna. So he had his understanding. We may not even be able to attempt to measure Krishna in such a way as Brahma could. But simply we will hear about Krishna. How great is Krishna? This chapter is describing King Chitraketu's seeing Lord Ananta. And that becomes again a contradiction. How can you see Ananta? He's unlimited. Then how can you see him? How has he got... He's sitting there, person, in one place. So you'll say, how is he unlimited? Because unlimited means he should be all-pervading. If he's sitting in one place, then he must be limited. That's what the Mayavadis say, impersonalists. Form is limited. Because he's sitting in one place, that means, just like I'm sitting here, means I'm not sitting in my bazaar. Because I'm only here, because I'm limited. If I was unlimited, then I'd be here and Loy Bazaar and Moscow and everywhere all at the same time. So you may think, how is Ananta sitting in one place? If he's Ananta, how can he be in one place? But no, he is Ananta means he's sitting on one place and simultaneously he's present everywhere. Therefore, he is really Ananta. And because our intelligence is Anta, we have limited intelligence, therefore we cannot understand Ananta. Therefore, we shouldn't try to put our limited impositions that God must be like this. As soon as you say God must be like this, it means you don't know what you're talking about. God is as He is, as He likes to be, without any imposition put upon Him by our ant-like brain. He is unlimited in all respects. Therefore, we simply offer our obeisances to Him and marvel at His wonderful qualities. Hare Krishna. Is there any question? Well, the question is that when we think of the power of the unlimited power of God, we can somehow or other get some kind of mental conception of that. But then when we think of all the unlimited living entities, even in one square mile, there are unlimited living entities. Some scientists at Oxford University some years ago, they studied for 5 years intensely, every day, one square mile of forest in England, all the living entities. Of course, they couldn't even see all the living entities, but at least the bigger ones that they could see. They studied for 5 years and they made a report on one square mile. What's going on? 5 years intense study. So unlimited living entities. How can we begin to imagine how God can keep a track of them all? We can't imagine because He's God. Therefore He's Ananta. Therefore we offer our respectful obeisances to Him. Accepting that what for us is impossible is for Him very easy. And if we try to understand with our limited brain, then simply we'll fail. That's what Brahma said after he tried to measure the qualities of Krishna. What is that verse? Jananta eva jananta. What is that verse? I can't remember. Anyway, he said to Krishna, if anyone thinks that he can understand all your qualities, they may say, someone may say, now I have understood Krishna. But as far as I'm concerned, and after all, Brahma is the most intelligent person in the universe, as far as I'm concerned, I don't think I'll ever be able to understand Krishna. If you could understand Krishna, then he wouldn't be worth being called God. If he's just like they say, God is great. They think God is great. All right, well, I'm also great. So I'm this much great, maybe God is this much great. No. Actually, we're this much great and God is unlimitedly good. No comparison. You can't even begin to compare. Even his cowherd boys, they're his personal associates. He has unlimited cowherd boyfriends. And he has an intimate personal relationship with all of them. We can hardly keep an intimate personal relationship, how many? With few people. Most people can only keep a very close relationship with very few people, maybe two, three, four. Krishna has intimate personal relationship with unlimited living beings. Therefore, he's God. We simply offer our respectful obeisances to him. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.